compromise.
He needs every minute he can.
Okay, welcome everyone to this April 5th, 2011 meeting of the Subcommittee on Higher Education. We have a couple of items on our work session agenda, and we might as well go to them right away. Okay, so I am going to open a work session on House Bill 3471. So, Hannah, remind me where we are. Did we approve the amendments to 3471?
No. Mr. Chair, we have not.
Okay. Okay, colleagues, last time we passed out the Dash 2 amendments, which were the amendments that we were going to move. Why don't we have a motion to approve those amendments, and then we can discuss them.
Mr. Chair, 3471, is that correct?
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated 3-31-11 to House Bill 3471.
Okay. Rep. Johnson has moved that we adopt the Dash 2 amendments. Colleagues, just to remind you, the Dash 2 amendments clarify the service component. They clarify that the tuition waivers are what are known as last dollar funding, so the students are required to apply for other kinds of financial aid first, particularly Pell Grant and the Oregon Opportunity Grant, and asks the Oregon Student Assistance Commission to come up with to adopt rules so that former foster youth are prioritized in the allocation of opportunity grants, so that those grants will come first. Any discussion of the amendments? Yes, Rick Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Piggyback on your comments. I think the amendments address some of the concerns that came out in our hearing. I think they make it a better bill, and I think they still accomplish what we were hoping to accomplish in the legislation. So.
Further comments? Okay. Seeing none, anyone disagree with our adopting these amendments, these Dash 2 amendments? Okay. Hearing none. The Dash 2 amendments are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3471 with the Dash 2 amendments to the House Committee on Education with the due pass recommendation.
Okay, Rep. Johnson moves adoption of the House Bill 3471 as amended and passed on to the Committee on Education with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Yes, Rep. Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not one to typically support bills of this nature. However, something was said in this committee, and I'm not sure who said it, that I think was really the crux of this issue, and that is whether it's by choice or not, and it certainly is not, the state is acting as the parent in this role. And so we have to step up to the plate and do the things that are right and provide those things that I believe parents should at least be supportive of supplying. And so it's because of that I am in support of this bill. I think it's the right thing to do. I think as far as we're in this budget crunch and working, even I'm sitting there on Ways and Means working on education budgets, and there aren't enough dollars for everything. I think of what is occurring already. The majority of these kids we hear are going to community colleges, and by the time they receive their federal aid and opportunity grant, they are just about there at that last dollar. This is one of those times where I think the right thing to do is to step up and support these kids to be successful.
Thank you, Representative. Other comments? And I would just remind the colleagues that the university system is in support of this bill. I think we're prepared to vote on it. So would you call the roll, please?
Sure. Representative Parker.
Aye.
Representative Boyle.
Aye.
Representative Lindsay.
Excused.
Representative Springer.
Aye.
Co-Chair Johnson.
Aye.
Co-Chair Deffro.
Aye. Okay. House Bill 3471 has been adopted, and we will send it to the House Committee on Education with a due pass recommendation. Okay. Thank you all who are here to observe that. I'll close the work session on House Bill 3471, and I will open a work session on House Bill 3521. House Bill 3521, colleagues, was the bill that is going to create the Transfer Student Bill of Rights. We had a hearing on it a couple of weeks ago, and we talked about potential amendments to the bill and a direction that it would take where it would create a process to create this Bill of Rights. And John Wyckoff, I think, is going to come forward to talk about these amendments. And Joe? Okay, please. And tell us what we got. The preliminary information I got was that the amendments are close but not yet perfect. And, of course, we're committed in this committee to sending out only perfect products. So we may have to come back on Thursday for one final tweak. But, gentlemen, I'd love to hear your comments.
Chair Denbrough, members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Wyckoff. I'm the legislative director for the Oregon Community College Association, representing Oregon's 17 community colleges. I would like to again thank the committee for their attention to this issue. And just as a very, very quick review, the overall goals of House Bill 3521 are to create a process for students that will guarantee them when they're transferring between a community college and an Oregon University System school that they will have certain guarantees in relation to that transfer, such as that their associate transfer degree will transfer, that all of those credits will transfer, or the Oregon Transfer Module, which is a one-year section, would be able to transfer, that they would be guaranteed a status of whether that be a sophomore or junior, depending on those degrees, with guaranteed time to completion, and that they're guaranteed a spot at an Oregon university, not necessarily the university of their choice, but an Oregon university after completing the AAOT or the associate's transfer module or transfer degree. Excuse me. The first version of the bill, what it really did was sort of mandate how that would work, and what the Dash 1 amendments do is really mandate that there will be a process that will outline how that will work. And I think for both the universities and the community colleges, that's the approach that we think it should take. And essentially what the Dash 1s do is call on use the joint board, which is a body of the Board of Education and the State Board of Higher Education, as the mechanism to create the right process to create these guarantees for students. I'm just going to walk through briefly a couple of three points that that we see in the legislation that we think need to be addressed. But I think we're both very comfortable that this is moving in the right direction, and that this legislation should continue to move through the process, and that we both feel like we're definitely moving in the right direction. So let me just point to a couple of the issues that we think should be addressed. On page 2, line 8, the bill mandates a process by which community colleges would automatically award an associate degree to a student upon completion of necessary credits. We would simply want to remove the word automatically there, and that we don't currently have the data system to be able to do that. What we want out of this process is to look at how to get there so that we can award for reverse transfer degrees, but could not yet fulfill the automatically, and really want the joint boards to be able to look at the best way to do that and how to get us there. But that is an issue that the colleges sometimes have when a student may get all the credits they need for an associate's, say, transfer to the University of Oregon, for example, and not ever get the associates, so they don't get counted as getting one. We would like to be able to do that, but do not have the systems yet to do it. The other piece was, the two other pieces are really related to the reporting requirements in the legislation. And the first is just on page 3, line 3. It mandates a report in November and sort of implies that that's really the final word, that after that report, we're done. And we think that that should probably be an ongoing conversation, maybe a biennial conversation at the least, to sort of look at the progress here. And then the last on page 3, sort of in sections of, that are in line 17 through 30, it talks about, I believe in line 17, having the... about whether to have a report, that the joint boards should decide whether to have a report. And we think that should be automatic, that there shouldn't be. We don't need to create a process to decide whether to have a report. There should just be a report on this. So those are three of the things we see. But again, this is really moving in the right direction, I think, and we're getting to a place where I think the universities and the colleges all feel that, that this creates some guarantees for students and is implementable and is something that we're comfortable with. And with that, I will conclude and take any questions.
And you and I talked, John, about calling out the term Transfer Student Bill of Rights as part of the legislation. I think that's important.
Chair Dembrough, yes, I agreed. I think the only reason I didn't address it in my testimony is that it doesn't necessarily address a technical policy piece in this, but we definitely agree that I think putting the language Student Transfer Bill of Rights in is important to in talking about what we're trying to do here.
Right. And also it refers to a transfer program as a one-year program, but of course, and I'm not sure where that came from, but... that's one variation, right?
Yeah, Chair Dembrough, we actually, since our conversation, we went through that again, and what the drafter is trying to do there, we believe, is she's really, that is only referring to the transfer of the OTM, the Oregon Transfer Module, which is a one-year, and it's not the associates, which is covered in a different part. So we think that what that really is doing is attempting to create a definition for the transfer module, and it's related just to that piece.
Gotcha. Thanks. Yes, Rep. Johnson.
John, I wonder with some of the uncertainties, I guess, about the ultimate governance structure of higher ed, do you find that wording about the joint boards of education being too restrictive, or do you think that's okay in terms of who eventually is going to be a part of that overall arching model? It still is being fleshed out, but, you know, I'm just wondering if the language is okay as it is, or do you see any problems long-term with that?
Chair Dembrough, Co-Chair Johnson, I think I do think it sort of remains to be seen what configuration the joint boards take, or whether it still exists. And I suppose we may want to look at language that says or equivalent entity.
Yeah, I think the way for House Bill 3418, I think we put in there or successor body or something like that. So we might want to do something similar.
I think we would just want to ensure that there's language
too narrow.
That it includes both, so that it represents both the universities and the whatever body,
right.
The community colleges or
yes.
Board of Education.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, any other questions for community colleges or universities here? Yes, Joe.
May I?
Please, yes, thank you.
Chair Dembrough, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Joe Holliday, Assistant Vice Chancellor, Student Success Initiatives, Oregon University System. And I agree with everything John said. We're on the same page. There are a couple of other things that I wanted to comment on, get on the record. To the extent that we are talking about the Associate of Arts Oregon Transfer Degree and the Oregon Transfer Module, we're very comfortable with it, and that's what you see on page 2, lines 1 through 7. And I think that's what John was basically just saying, too. I won't speak for him. It's because we have the track record there, and we do admit students with those two credentials, and we do not unpack those programs, and we admit those students. So if we're talking about other associate's degrees, AAS degrees, for example, then we'd like to take that path, and as we did with the AAOT, find out what would be necessary to align those. So that's our only discomfort there, is that we know what we're talking about with the AAOT and the OTM. So,
right. And I would hope that that conversation would be lined up with this conversation, right? That
right.
there will also be conversation about how to deal with people who, you know, have, who are not necessarily on the transfer degree or module path, but, you know, how do we treat those? Right. Do we create new transfer degrees, et cetera?
Right. Chair Dembrow, in fact, because we're so comfortable with the AAOT, I think that gives us the ability to say, you know, did that, let's move on to these other ones. So I think that would be excellent territory to cover. Mm-hmm. And then the only other comment is we would be interested in seeing some form of some section addressing student responsibilities with rights come responsibilities. And one of the versions of amendments we submitted recently included that language in here. I believe in these amendments that may be addressed on line 19 of page 2 on the amendments in the statement about requirements mm-hmm. that students must meet in order to benefit from the standards. If that's what that means, again, very comfortable with it. But we believe we could do the students justice as well as the community colleges and OUS by clearly pointing out to students what they can do to ensure their success. And so we'd be very interested in seeing that.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Any questions for Mr. Holliday? Okay, thank you both. And we'll try to get these technical fixes on the fast track this afternoon.
Yeah.
Have them for you for Thursday. Yes. Okay, so I am going to carry over this work session on House Bill 3521. And now I'm going to open a public... to close the work session. Okay. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3521, and I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2316. Anna, you want to just give us a quick introduction to what 2316 purports to do?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2316 establishes Portland State University as a public corporation independent of the Oregon University System. It authorizes the development of plans for reorganizing of Oregon Health and Science University and PSU under control of the Portland Metropolitan University Board of Directors, requires the PMU Board to submit a report to the Legislative Assembly on a plan for reorganization. It changes the name of OHSU, Board of Directors to the PMU Board and declares legislative intent regarding the PSU budget and funding. It directs transfer of duties, functions, and powers from the State Board of Higher Education to the PMU Board and becomes operative July 1st, 2013. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Anna. Representative Greenlick will be coming in to speak to that bill eventually, but first we would... have the pleasure of bringing up the presidents of these two institutions, and they will talk about just the what the relationship is between these two institutions right now, how they're changing, and the work that they're doing jointly to improve education here in Oregon. So it's my pleasure to bring up Dr. Robertson and Dr. Vivel. And it's my real pleasure to have them coming before us and not asking for money.
you don't
that
know.
Was, that, yeah. No, that was this morning. So. Okay, so whoever wants to start. And I will point out for the record that I am branded here with my PSU tie. So, go on.
Chair Dembrow, members of the committee, I'm Joe Robertson, president of OHSU. I know that I speak for President Vivel as well as myself, or Vim and Joe as we call each other, as I express the delight that we have to be here with you and talk about the joint future of our institutions and what we can do together to improve both the education and the living conditions of our citizens. We're each going to give a very brief overview of our institution. This will probably, because that's not the heart of the discussion today, it's about what we can do together going forward. This is probably going to be the briefest summary of OHSU that I've ever provided. So we're always happy to provide more details. We do have slides if we can activate them.
Sweet.
Well, okay, if we want to change them, do you do that or do we?
You just press the down arrow.
Press the down arrow.
All right.
He's our technical
whiz.
Okay.
Techie, you're in trouble.
Okay, next. As all of you, we're off to a good start. As all of you know, OHSU is a nonprofit. It's a public corporation, and I would very much stress the word public. That is first and foremost who and what we are. And I say that not only from the institutional perspective, but that's why the people at OHSU that work there have chosen to work there. We take that public mission very, very seriously. We do have a 10-member board that's nominated by the governor, confirmed by the Senate.
Excuse me, Joe, can I jump in on that?
Yes.
Can you tell us who is on your board of directors? You don't have to name everyone, but just to give us an idea of how they're, you know, who they might represent.
Chair Dimbrough, members of the committee, yes, we have 8 members from the public. I sit on the board as president, and we have a student member. The 8 members are to come across a diverse segments of the community. We have business leaders and community leaders, people with background in state government, people with background in education. And during the orientation that I give to the board, and I speak to them specifically, each of those 8 members, 9 in some ways, but the student is there as a representative of the students, but the constituents of each of our board member is every citizen of the state of Oregon. A very key element of our board is it is not a board that represents smaller constituencies.
Great. And they're all Oregonians?
They all are and always have been Oregonians.
Thank you.
I won't go over all the statistics. I would like to emphasize the last one. We always want to emphasize that we think our campus is 96,000 square miles, the entire state of Oregon, and I think it's of interest for people to know that we have a major presence of each of our missions, you know, the traditional healing, teaching, discovery, and outreach in each county in Oregon. So we're not just talking about Markham Hill. I would also like the committee to know the importance that the Oregon legislature has played in the success of OHSU. If you look at OHSU, it is over the past 10 to 15 years that it's grown from a major academic health center, a good academic health center, to being one of in the big leagues, so to speak. And there are lots of ways of different of measuring this, but if you go around the country, there are 20 or 30 institutions where things really happen. And I think the best testimony of that is the type of faculty that we are able to recruit. And I say that the legislature had played an important role because the real milestones are the creation of the public corporation in 1995, the Oregon Opportunity, the idea was conceived in the earliest days of this century and then played out over the past 10 years, $200 million of basically tobacco money matched with $386 million of private philanthropy, and then finally providing the umbrella of tort reform for the health system so that various procedures can be done at OHSU that otherwise probably could not be done within the state.
Let me just make a few comments about Portland State. Some of you heard most of this morning, so I too will be brief. As you know, of course, we are one of the 7 institutions of the Oregon University system. Close to 30,000 students. Last year we awarded 5,200 degrees, which is more than any other institution of higher education in the state. Our research contribution, while clearly I don't think you gave the number for OHSU, OHSU's external funded research is about $350 million. So our $58 million is still small compared to that, but it is up by 50% over just the last 2 years, and we are on track to raise that to the $80 to $100 million range, and this is one of the areas, of course, where we are becoming more similar, and some of that has come about through collaboration. About 4,000 employees, and a very large economic impact on the region because of our payroll, our purchasing, and so on, and a very large number of alumni because of our 65-year history, most of whom stay in the state. If you combine our economic impact, you're talking about $5 billion impact and affecting both through our direct employment and our multiplier, something like creating 41,000 direct and indirect jobs in the state. Again, I don't have to tell you what the impact of that is on taxes in the state. So a very large economic engine together. For the rest of our presentation, Joe will talk a little bit about both the history of collaboration between the two institutions and then the particular planning process we've gone through during the past 15 months or so. I will talk about the specific recommendations, and then together we will wrap up with talking about some of the specific things that we're working on right now.
Yes, and indeed we have worked together for decades, and now that Representative Greenlick has joined us, I would like to thank him as well as prodding us and helping to ensure that we continue to do more together, and we have been inspired by his faith in both institutions and the belief of the important role that they will play going forward.
And Joe, how long have you been at OHSU? Perhaps you could tell us that.
I've been there, Chair Dimbrough, I've been there almost as long as Representative Greenlick has been associated with OHSU. I came in...
Associated 47 years?
Well, 32 for me. I first came came to do my residency in 1979 and have almost been there continuously since that time. Thank you. So there's... one other point that I want to make is that the collaboration just didn't arise de novo. We've been collaborating for many years. And OHSU, this is not new to our culture, okay? It's not just with PSU. And I think that's important because you do need a collaborative substrate for this to be successful. And I've had the opportunity during my 30-plus years there to collaborate with many institutions, other health systems, other educational systems, and at every level, whether I was a division chief, a department chair, a dean, or a president. So this is not a new activity. I do think it's one that we are getting better and better at. I also want to compliment President Bebel. It was very apparent to me from the first day that he set foot in Portland that it was one of his priorities to work with other institutions and specifically his neighbor, OHSU. So I think we have a very rich environment from which we can go forward. Some of the specific more recent examples include in public health, there's an Oregon MPH that has involved not only PSU but OSU. There are many more joint appointments and joint faculty research projects. One of the most recent and most notable is Joe Gray, is a distinguished cancer researcher. It's a multi-million-dollar recruitment, and he is one of the leading cancer researchers in the country and would not have come to OHSU were it not for the mathematics, physics, and chemistry available at PSU. PSU is the largest feeder to our medical school. Recognizing that, we had hoped at one time even to put a branch campus of the medical school at PSU as well as OSU and U of O. That was not funded, but I think it helped develop a lot of relationships that continue to prosper. We've essentially combined the resources of our library, making all of those facilities available to both the students and faculty on both campuses. Roughly 2 years ago, we did form, inspired by Representative Greenlick, we formed the task force, which has worked over the ensuing period between the legislative sessions. This was a 22-member group with wide representation from both the university, the community, and the business community. And the goal, simply stated, was to find the best way for the institutions to leverage our state resources and work together to provide enhanced educational opportunities. There were three subcommittees, basically the three areas that were would take the most work if, as we collaborate, research, academic, which means predominantly the educational arena, and administrative. And each of those committees had members from each of the universities and also from the public. As part of the process, the group looked at the history of academic mergers. There is a long history of both success and failure, and we were privileged to have as the as consultants that helped us Jim Martin and Jim Samuels, probably the two most distinguished people in the country with expertise in this arena. And as we went through actually some of the case histories and tried to draw from those lessons, and as you see on the slide, the reasons for success are substantially similar administrative structures and academic cultures. And since, even over the past few months, I've tried to explore that a little bit further and have talked to people that were at UCSF and Stanford when that merger was attempted. And if you really, I think at the end of the day, this similar administrative structures and academic cultures is really a euphemism for the fact that the faculty want it to happen. Okay, so you there was little time taken there to build the case for the merger, and I think as people look back, that was a mistake, and there was substantial faculty resistance, and that's really among the chief reasons that did not succeed. And the other key element is the ability to make the initial investment. There, you know, we're talking about trying to achieve economies of scale and scope, but it does take initial investment to do that on a grand scale. There are many opportunities to do that on a more organic basis that require less initial investment, but also develop the idea of a shared culture and set the stage for further collaboration. So now for the main course, we come to the recommendations.
Okay, I will take you through these 12 specific recommendations. Again, the committee, the task force that met, spent many meetings and many conversations in between meetings to come up with a whole variety of ideas that then got boiled down to the leading ones. But they're also very much the recognition that this is going to be an ongoing process. And in particular, that's why the first two recommendations really refer to creating a structure and a process to have this dialogue going on. As Joe pointed out earlier, there have already been a lot of collaborations between the institutions over time. I think it's fair to say that in many cases, those came about either through the individual initiative of small groups of faculty, or in some cases by through the shape of a major institutional initiative. We thought it was very important to create an ongoing structure so that this will continually come up with new ideas, new things to do, as well as monitoring the ones that are already going on. So that's why we're calling this a formal strategic alliance. It's not just two institutions that work together, you know, when people sort of feel like it. No, it's a much more formal way of thinking about it. And to make that happen, instead of, as here it says, a steering committee, we really have two committees. One is what we call the implementation committee, which is from each of the two institutions, the provost, the vice president for academic affairs, and the vice president for research. Those are really the three key people, and as you can tell, they match the three committees that we had in the task force. So those six people that really have the day-to-day responsibility, or if not day-to-day, at least week-to-week, to really make sure that whatever ideas come up really happen. They will be guided by and overseen by an advisory committee, which will be broadly representative and will, for starters, be the same people as those that were on the task force. So it has community representation as well as representation from several of the internal constituencies, the faculty, students, union, and so on. That will continue to generate new ideas as well as make sure that this collaboration proceeds in a organizationally sound way. And of course, as presidents, we will be monitoring the pursuit and the activities of both of those bodies. Moving on to the substance then, the key substantive ideas that we are working on, and that will no doubt keep us busy for a while, but again, there will be more as time goes on. The first one, we're very excited, is a new collaborative school of public health. Now, this is not a simple process because of the nature of the accreditation criteria, that actually the first step is that one organization, one school has to be accredited, and it looks right now like OHSU is the one that's closest to being accreditable, but then the School of Public Health itself will really take in and be based on a collaborative model involving Portland State faculty as well. This will allow us to bring in more research dollars, draw more students, and really increase the number of projects that people undertake. Oregon is really one of the few states without a School of Public Health, and we think this would be a great addition to the state.
Mr. President, can I just jump in for
Absolutely.
A moment?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I find this a very exciting prospect as well. But I've heard rumors that Oregon State University is also interested in creating a School of Public Health. Is that going to create a problem? Do we have the capacity in the state to have two schools of public health? Perhaps the two of you could address that.
Yes, we've had discussions with our colleagues at Oregon State, and they have been developing strengths in a lot of areas that could, if they so chose, ultimately lead to the establishment of a School of Public Health. Whether they will actually take that step or not is not entirely clear yet, but they certainly are doing things that are needed in the area, especially related to rural health issues, which is an area that on the whole PSU and OHSU would not do that much work in, although, you know, clearly we both do some of that. The way we're working at it now, both of these units, if they ultimately result in two schools of public health, would be addressing very important needs. Phil, you want to add to that?
Chair Denbrough, members of the committee, every school of public health has different relative areas of strengths, and you need to emphasize certain areas in the accreditation process. I think, as we look forward, we look at what our school will be rather than actually spending time looking at what another school might be, and I see that we're, together we will have very specific strengths in the area of biostatistics, epidemiology, community health, and there are certain targeted areas of public health that we think we will address.
Chair, may I comment on that?
Please do, Rep. But please do introduce yourself.
For the record, Mitch Greenlick, State Representative, House District 33. It seems to me, and I've been working in this public health field all this time, including I was the one who really developed the three-university MPH program. The School of Public Health needs to be in Portland, and the resources are in Portland for a particular kind of School of Public Health. It's possible for there to be one in Corvallis, and that can happen, but most of the students get their training in Portland, either at PSU or at OHSU now, and the sort of particular focus of healthcare of the future is really what we're talking about in the Portland area. So it seems to me, whatever happens at Corvallis, there absolutely needs to be a campus at Portland. And it seems to me the resources, particularly if we can figure out how the two institutions can work more closely together, is a logical place to put those resources together.
Thank you. I'm glad we were able to discuss this.
Thank you. The next recommendation speaks about our collaborative research enterprise that, there are a lot of activities related to supporting research, helping faculty identify funding opportunities, then helping them actually write those grants, and then both the instrumentation and other resources related to actually doing the research, and finally the accounting and processing of grants, and there are a million other steps related to that. Greater collaboration, whether that's done within our current institution, we're also talking about the possibility of creating a separate not-for-profit research consortium, which has certain organizational advantages, but we're not sure yet whether that's the right way to go. But this is an area where As you can see, the joint research right now is already approaching around $400 million, depending on the year, up to $450 million. We think it will further strengthen both our visibility and the ease of collaboration among our faculty and our principal investigators. The new life sciences building that we are just about this close to really having all the architectural design, excuse me, the financing, a lot of the other pieces that are needed for that are just about done. That will provide a physical place that both is symbolic of our collaboration, but will also, again, make it easier because we will have our chemistry and biology departments will be significantly housed there, a lot of the classes will be housed there, and we will have a lot of faculty from both institutions working there. That will be down on the south waterfront. We are very excited about that. And as part of that, we've also begun to encourage collaborations in maybe less obvious fields. Just about a month ago, we had about 15 faculty from the humanities and education from PSU meeting with people from faculty from OHSU who have relevant interest to talk about how they can collaborate. And there was just enormous excitement in that room. One of the issues always is when you have two institutions that inevitably, because of their size, have at times some bureaucratic rules, administrative rules. This morning, in talking about Senate Bill 242, I talked about some of the problems caused by our current status as a state agency and therefore being subject to state purchasing rules, state appointment rules, and so on. There are administrative barriers that we could smoothed out. 242 is a part of that, but there are other things that even within our current structure, whatever the structures are, we can handle just by setting it up so it isn't done on a case-by-case basis, but so that it's solved for once and for all, and people can just go through the same steps, issues of student tuition, joint faculty credentialing, and so on.
So, Mr. President, can you give us an example of one or two ways in which 242 would help the two universities to work closely together?
Well, right now, we have, for instance, if we want to do something, a project jointly that involves either purchasing things or hiring outside consultants, you know, we have different purchasing and hiring rules than OHSU does. So now we got to jump through different sets of hoops. And it seems that every time when somebody wants to do it, they kind of have to refigure it out all over again. Again, that's where 242 would simply make it more straightforward. Again, even if it didn't have, we would want to create protocols, because 242 will not solve all the problems, create protocols so that we are just more adept at doing this, and we don't have to have the individual faculty running around trying to figure out what are your rules, what are my rules. Even simple things like getting people access to the libraries, you know, there's a whole bunch of things like that. The coordinating shared instrumentation, buying research facilities or equipment jointly, again, it isn't like we couldn't have done that in the past. Once you have a presidential commitment, a provostal commitment, a vice presidential commitment to a strategic alliance, people are going to be more readily thinking about this. And you need to create a culture in each of our institutions where when our chemistry department or Joe's School of Medicine says, we need an X, and this X costs, you know, $50,000, that somebody says, well, does PSU have one? Might PSU need one? How about if we each put up 25? Would that work? It's just a mode of thinking that, you know, frankly, doesn't always come naturally to people, and that you need to put into a culture to really make it a routine part of people's operations. One that was a recommendation we've already begun to do. You know, we have a hotel, a University Place hotel, that is very close, and we suggested that we can start using that for the families of patients when the patient has to spend longer time at OHSU. I know you tried to get them out of the door as healthily as soon as you can. And we have lowered the rates in that hotel to match what the insurance will pay people. so that it's a very good and affordable deal for the patients and their families, and frankly, it helps us fill the hotel. So it's a good deal for both the families and for us. So that's working out. And during the last five months, we've had 1,000 room nights under this new very much reduced rate. So it's been a good thing. The ninth recommendation talks about further areas of administrative collaboration. One that I like, for instance, you know, some of them are obvious, IT, purchasing, facilities planning is very much going on with the Life Sciences Center. Healthcare, the directors of our Student Health Center and Joe's Student Health Center are now talking, have monthly meetings. We're talking about having OHSU medical students working in our clinic to treat our students, but also to buy insurance for our students, which has become increasingly expensive, jointly taking advantage of a greater pool to get a better rate for our students. Working together on public safety. You know, we each have our own way of handling the public safety issues. Since we're so close together, there's a clear efficiency of doing more things together. Child care. There's a great need for child care on both of our campuses. They're close enough that we can be more efficient there. And these are just some of the examples. We are already, on recommendation 10, doing some joint faculty recruitment. Joe alluded to that. Again, right now, when we actually want to appoint somebody, it's a complicated process. We haven't streamlined that. Again, giving it this more formal status will facilitate that. We're working together. We have a meeting coming up later in April, and then in May, another one, to work together on STEM education in K-12. We're putting together a big effort between our two institutions involving Intel, Beaverton, and Hillsborough school districts, a couple of other partners, to have our faculty and upper-level students working with K-12 schools on making them aware of careers in sciences and health-related fields to make sure that these people, that these kids understand where the opportunities are. And then finally, the task force was very clear about supporting 242. I think when the task force did its work, it didn't have a bill number yet, but supporting that bill to make it easier for us to create the kind of partnerships we are discussing here. So these are the main recommendations, and I'll turn it back to Joe to talk a little bit about some of the things that are going on already that we haven't already mentioned. A lot of them have come up already, but Joe, you want to maybe elaborate just a little further?
Certainly. Again, Chair Dembro and members of the committee, we've mentioned a lot of these. I would say any of our major recruitments now, it's not every recruitment, but any of the major recruitments that we have at OHSU are now done in conjunction with PSU, because literally, Joe Gray is but one example, these major recruitments, we are investing millions of dollars in these people, and it is a very select group of people that you go after for the superstars, and they are very interested in, you know, at the basic science level, what are the mathematics, chemistry, and physics support. Furthermore, like any major appointment at either institution now, I think, involves both institutions. We are currently in the midst of a provost search at OHSU, and the provost from PSU is a member of that committee. So I think, you know, we have a lot of things that we're listing here, but we have already reached the milestone of functionally we think about each other in the work, day-to-day workings of the university. There have been two research symposia where the research faculty have gotten together. The days where people succeed in science working in silos in their laboratory and they're just all sheltered are essentially over. Science is now done on a grand scale where multiple parties and multiple people are involved. The greatest scientific discoveries are occurring at the interfaces of disciplines, so you have to be able to bring people with vastly different areas of expertise together. So I think that's another driver that we're using to get the faculty to work together. This implementation group, besides the six members that Bim mentioned, each of our chief of staff is very much involved in this, and so we get frequent reports, and each of our provosts have sort of been given this as a specific charge to make sure that it succeeds, and they know that they will be held accountable to us in their annual performance review. So I think we have some measures in place to make sure that this group really will have some teeth in its efforts as it moves forward. And the life sciences building, I mean, this will be another major milestone, because this will, the magic will start to happen, because people will be thrown together and they will be eating together or seeing each other in the commons area. They will each know others at the institution. So I'm really looking forward to the ability to actually commingle our faculty, and that is not perhaps as far away as some of you might think. We are still hoping to break ground on that by the end of the calendar year. So I think that
this concludes our presentation. Of course, we'd be happy to take any questions that you have.
Great. Well, before I solicit questions, I just want to make a comment, and that is, you know, I remember when we had a conversation about this topic 2 years ago, and that was before the Education Committee. Several of us were there, and I remember thinking, oh, there goes Representative Greenlick again. But I have to say I'm very impressed with the progress that's been made. And, you know, at that time, you two made a commitment to, you know, to really create an active partnership. And I'm very impressed with how far it's gone. So having said that, questions, panel, or committee of the panel. Representative Parker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks to the three of you for being here and all the thinking that's gone into this. And personally, I find this collaboration one of the more exciting things going on in the state. I have referenced a couple of times on this committee and elsewhere things going on in other parts of the country where there are big collaborative projects, Research Triangle Park, of course, being one of them. And in the Chronicle of Higher Education, this may not actually end in a question for you, but it might. Okay. Actually, I think I know what the question is. Chronicle of Higher Education, January 30th of this year, there was an article discussing some of the projects and what that triangle has done for the state economy. And in it, there's discussion of the commitment of the state legislature to fund, critically, at dire times, to fund the infrastructure supporting that type of endeavor and that specific endeavor. And the author actually talks about decisions between road maintenance and infrastructure that was going to get the flywheel going. So, any comments on that, gentlemen?
That was a loose question.
Fill in the blank. It's open-ended.
I will comment. In Chicago, we often quoted Daniel Burnham saying, make no small plans because they have no magic to stir man's blood. And to succeed, you do have to make big plans. Promise, this state has not put its money where its mouth is. Mm-hmm. This has been the biggest disappointment to me coming here. It's something that I was only barely beginning to see when I took the job, and it's been far worse than probably anybody could imagine at the time. And without that kind of investment, to make grandiose plans is a fool's errand. Without that kind of investment, you have to build on what you have. You have to take small steps. You have to be very thoughtful and very careful. So something that I might have thought was possible 2.5 years ago, frankly, right now, I don't think is possible. I was there at the University of Illinois at Chicago when the Chicago Circle campus merged with the University of Illinois at the Medical Center. You know, one, a mostly undergraduate campus that was started to serve returning veterans after the war. The other one, formerly the medical school associated with the flagship campus. Sound familiar at all? but it took a major investment. Those are institutions that even now have about three times more funding per capita than Portland State has. And at the time, they got special money to make the merger happen. I've seen how it can be done, but it's painful, it takes a long time, requires enormous effort. That is not what's in the cards here right now. So I would rather have a realistic plan that I feel we can really make happen and we can do good things than chase the windmill. And I say that as a duck.
Chair Dembro, members of the committee, my comments will be brief. Research Triangle was mentioned as a classic example. I will mention a couple examples a little closer to home. As I said, we play in the big leagues. We play in the same league as University of Washington and UCSF. However, they do have a higher ranking, and there is no question about that. And as you look back 50 to 60 years, there was not even a medical school at University of Washington. But what distinguishes both of those campuses from Eddie here in Portland is that for 50 years, I've actually gone back and looked at the data, for 50 years, the state investment has been, depending upon which institution in which we're, 7 to 12 times greater, for instance, in the medical school than it has been in the state. So we're playing close. We're staying close, but it's with literally an order of magnitude difference of support. So if you're going to think truly grand, it does take more investment.
Rep. Gregory.
Can I make a statement?
Sure.
Thank you. Mitch Greenwick, yes. And House District 33.
And then, excuse me, Rep. And then we'll want you to speak to your bill as well.
Well, I can
do that. Do you want to do that now?
Yeah, I can do that in the same context.
Great.
If it's
thank
okay.
You.
First of all, I admire these two gentlemen very much. They're good friends and they've done a great job, and I think this work on the Strategic Alliance has been spectacular and one I really admire and I think moves us forward. My framework is a slightly bigger framework than the framework here, and that's the question of how do we produce a major research university in the Portland metropolitan area. I think the future of this metropolitan area depends on our ability to have a major research institution here. I think economic development depends on it. I think the plans for how we educate our children in the future depends on it. So I keep looking for what steps could we possibly take, minor or grand steps, to move us towards the development of a major metropolitan research university. And I see it, I see the seeds of it in these two institutions. So that says to me, how do we move in order to get toward that objective? Small steps, not grand steps. I proposed in the bills before this committee over the last sessions a plan to ultimately merge the two institutions. And I do that because I think ultimately these two institutions inevitably will become a single institution. How long it takes, how it happens is open, but I think it's inevitable because I think the alternative to that is cutting up the education function in the metropolitan area in a way that we end up nowhere in terms of our competitive metropolitan area. I've worked in these two institutions, for those of you that don't know me. I taught a class every term for about 30 years at Portland State and a variety of departments, all the way from medical sociology to complex organization, sociology of the sport. I introduced Oregon. And I've also taught for almost 50 years at OHSU, ending up as chair of the Department of Preventive Medicine for 10 years in the decades of the 90s. So I love both institutions. I think I'm very close to both of them. I looked at what they did in the Strategic Alliance and asked myself, what will it take to make the Strategic Alliance work? I mean, I spent 8 years trying to get the registrars of the two universities to jointly register our MPH students and saw the inter-university complexities of a single thing, like getting dual listed classes for the same class regardless of where it was taught. And in the MPH programs, half of the program is taught at PSU, half of the program is taught at OHSU, and over years we've managed to coordinate that a bit. it strikes me that the answer is to help do away with the interinstitutional barriers. I don't know whether the Senate bill is going to go forward. I can't figure out the dynamics of these committees, of our complex committees right now. I read the front page of the Oregonian and see things about that. But I have an alternative, and I have a dash one amendments available to the bill that's in front of you now, whose number I forget. I have
2324, but that's 2316.
What is it?
2316.
2316. I have a dash one amendments. What the dash one amendments does is it takes out the components of the original bill that deal with the merger. And all it does is provide a framework for PSU to move out of OUS, to expand the OHSU board, to create a new board, which I would call the Portland Metropolitan University's board, and put both institutions under the same board and let them run as parallel institutions over time. Ultimately, I think that will create a smooth move. If the Senate bill passes, then I'll be back with it in February, and I'll be back with it again next year. But if the Senate bill doesn't pass, I would suggest you keep this alive, because I think this gives you a reasonable first step to move in a direction that would benefit, ultimately benefit both universities, benefit PSU, I think, very quickly. And I know the president is committed not to get into things other than the university system is proposing. But I think if this would become a reality and a real potential, then I would ask you to ask him again when he would have a chance to think about whether this would move the process forward. It would achieve, from Portland State's perspective, what is attempting to be achieved by moving moving the OUS system out of the state framework. It would achieve the same thing, but it would achieve something more, because it would also give him a board that would be a real board that could actually do some good rather than a paper board. I'm basically opposed to the OUS plan and will vote against it. I'm opposed to it because I don't see that it takes us anywhere. I see it as a step in a vacuum. And I was hoping that the OUS would create a strong strategic plan that would talk about the future of higher ed in the state, and particularly talk about the future of higher ed in the metropolitan area, because I don't think if there's a plan for higher ed in the metro area, there's a plan for higher ed in the state. So I would just urge you to keep this idea alive as a way of moving forward the strategic alliance, begging the question about merger, because I think it's kind of a straw man that we don't necessarily need to get into. I think it will be an inevitable thing anyhow. And that's my plea to you. Keep alive, maybe schedule a possible work session so that as the time you can schedule it, so that if the Senate bill falls apart, there's a fallback position to help move this strategic alliance in a way that's very helpful. And that's my plea.
Well, thank you very much, Rep. And also thanks for your point about the uncertainty about bills that come out of this committee. Everything's up in the air. But why don't we take advantage of having our two presidents here to get some response from you two, and I'd like to sort of lead this off by saying that, you know, I think we do have a commitment. I know I am committed to participating in a process over the next year that's going to look at the question of local boards for all of our universities, and I know that that's been a long-standing interest at Portland State. I don't know about long-standing. It's been an interest. And whether as we are exploring options for local boards, you know, should we also be looking at new configurations? You know, this idea of a kind of joint board on some level between these two institutions, is that something that has any kind of future as far as you two are concerned, whether it's a long time coming or something worth talking about? And I leave it up to you two to decide who speaks first.
I'm going to give Joe the honor.
He was very strategic in speaking first to say that I would address the issue first. I'm usually known for short answers. This will not be, there is not a short answer here. And I would want to start this answer in all sincerity by saying the three of us here do share a common objective, and that is we do want these institutions to work together to not only be most efficient, but to provide the most benefit for education and for our citizens. And I mean, we all truly believe that. We may disagree at time on the means. I don't even have any. Mitch's vision is one that, under the right circumstances, you know, really excites me. Okay, where the issues are is about the process for getting there. And so maybe rather than answer the question directly, let me tell you what I think probably more about than anything else as we go through that. I think about the state of the faculty. I spend as much time, and so everything that I think about in this context really relates back to the faculty, because if the faculty are in the right frame of mind, we end up getting a lot of research done, the outreach happens, and the students are taught. Okay, so in thinking about the faculty, how you say something is also just as important as what you say. And so at every step of the way, we need to make sure that we're bringing the faculty along. I have, you know, we have thousands of faculty that are incredibly committed, but they did not go there to have a boss, okay? This is not a command and control organization. So it is, we need to build the faculty support at each step of the way. Faculty are easily scared, okay? We do not retain them because of their compensation. We retain them because they want to be there. We retain them, it's ironic, but it's a very, part of the reason we retain faculty at OHSU is because they actually recognize that it's a collaborative environment. Brian Druker will tell you that he came to OHSU where he oversaw the development of Gleevec. One of the key reasons was because it was a collaborative environment. So we have the right type of environment. When we get down to the specifics, I would be reluctant to do anything or even make any specific comment before I had the opportunity to discuss this matter with my faculty. And it's not because there's either philosophical agreement or disagreement, but I need to be, just as you have certain constituencies that you represent, I feel that I'm a representative and work for that faculty constituency. So I would want to talk to them before I would go on the record. So that's really, that is in all honesty the best answer that I can give you.
Thank you.
My faculty always just do what I tell. Thank you for that question, Representative Dembrow. It is a very complicated area, and indeed the research that the task force did that looked at mergers and attempted mergers elsewhere made it very clear that the politics, both at the level of state legislatures, of course, in the case of public institutions, but then within institutions, are incredibly complex and very, very important, and if not handled right, can doom things right from the beginning. First, Representative Greenlee correctly noted that as president of an OUS institution, I have sort of sworn fealty to 242. So, you know, that's the way we're now going. I have always, since I've come here, and really once that discussion started about a restructuring of the university system, I have been intrigued by the question of whether it would be beneficial for Portland State to have a board that is more focused on that institution. Inevitably, the Oregon University System Board, which are wonderful, smart, and very dedicated people, you know, they they're watching over a lot of stuff, and so there's a limit. Good boards give advice and support to institutions, and, you know, PSU is almost a $500 million a year corporation, so it's not so crazy to think that you could have a group of people totally dedicated to that. How it works to have one board that runs two institutions, one of which has very tough economics in a very tough changing climate in terms of healthcare. You know, I think that's not an easy question. Certainly, in my experience at Illinois Chicago, you know, it was the old, you know, if the medical school or rather if the hospital coughs, the rest of the institution gets pneumonia. You know, it doesn't take much of a hiccup in their bottom line or their bed occupancy rate to suddenly mess up the teaching of English 101, because now all the money goes to making sure the clinical operation doesn't go down. The competition for capital resources, if you're on the one end you're choosing between something that will generate more clinical resources than something that expands the teaching ability. So it would not be an easy matter for one board to run now these two institutions. So there are a lot of issues, and those are just two. Joe focused on the faculty one, I'm focusing on the board one. It would require a lot of debate, but I would be intrigued with any model that begins to address the reality that probably over the next year we're going to have a discussion about who governs higher ed and who governs the individual institutions, and it certainly would be reasonable to have this as one of the things that one ought to discuss.
Yeah, and just to follow up as an example, I think it takes our board members about 2 years to get up to speed due to the, and that's from them talking to them. So I think that's just an important, you know, piece of background information.
Well, yours is a very complex mission, right? Because you do have the healthcare component, which is substantial.
Yeah, and the educational mission, to people to understand the hydraulics at OHSU, we bring, and this is actually one of the threats to OHSU going forward in the era of healthcare reform, as clinical margins are diminished, it will threaten our ability to, which we currently do, is to bring $100 million from the health system over to support the academic mission. That means $100 million a year, including more than $15 million from the faculty, is brought over to support our teaching and research effort. The board does have to become very astute in the management of healthcare-related issues. We just looked at the next 10 years, and a 1% difference in our commercial rate of payment over the next 10 years has not a total dollar value, because I don't know what the actual revenue number is, but the net change to the OHSU position, the net in our net assets after a decade with only a 1% change is $853 million. So that board does have to be acutely focused on the economics of healthcare.
Thank you. Report.
I think I've got two comments as opposed to questions. I first just want to say thank you so much, everybody, for being here. It's fascinating and important work. But my understanding is that moving forward with the governor's proposal for, you know, 0 through 20 look at education, so we're not just looking at higher education by itself, but rather what do we need to do to get a child from the time they're born, early childhood education, to graduating from high school and then college, and what do we need to do to work in an entire system? And it is my understanding that the governor is supportive, number one, of taking our universities out of state agency status. I don't think there's anyone that thinks that should be happening. It's not. Well, it's just not a good thing, as Martha Stewart would say. But also to allow for a framework, to have a framework that would allow for local boards and some local control, and to create a system where we could get more private investments into our university system, because the public-private match and bringing in dollars in a different way. I mean, you're right. You can't continue operating and we can't continue operating the way that we have and still want to be have one of the greatest university education systems in the country. And I think we can get there. But again, we have to do some things differently. But Representative Greenlich, I do believe that the framework that's being set up both through Senate Bill 909 and the work that's been done on 242 will allow us to move forward and have a framework not just for PSU, OHSU, but also for certain other schools that may or may not be close to the area that I represent. And then going back to something that was mentioned before about the School for Public Health, I think that it's a great idea that we have a good university system in the metro area. I don't represent the metro area, but I understand why we need that. OHSU has done a phenomenal job in making sure that their students, specifically, primary care medical students, have access to rural practice and understand what it's like to practice in rural areas. But the fact of the matter is that I get very concerned that we focus on the metro area and forget about the rest of the state and the public health impacts of, different cultural norms, be it, the approach to teen pregnancy in rural areas, obesity, poverty. When people in rural areas don't really consider themselves poor, everybody's kind of, on the same level. We have to understand that there is a difference between our urban areas, our rural areas, and different parts of the state, and I, rightly or wrongly, I really worry that we focus a lot of attention on the metro area, and I don't want us to forget about the rest of the state when we're looking at public health or we're looking at our higher education system. So that's just, again, it's a concern.
Sure. If I can comment, President Hoyle, two premier programs at OHSU that do exactly what you're talking about is, first, a joint MD-MPH program.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm emeritus, so I can't get out of it, but we have a program that recruits about 10 to 12 of the brightest potential medical students in the country each year for a five-year program that's a joint MD and a master's of public health. Most of those are interested in the kind of issues in primary care and rural access that you talked about. In addition, we have a premier joint residency program in family medicine and in public health. That's a four-year residency program with an MPH in it. Almost all of those are focusing on rural primary care and other kinds of areas. I mean, I think, as Dr. Robertson said, the 9,600 square mile,
right? 96,000.
96,000 square mile campus is really true in the public health area. It's also true in other areas, but I'm particularly familiar with that. Incidentally, I do want to comment on what brings faculty to OHSU. I served the first 5 years as a department chair at a dollar a year salary. Actually, it was 1% or something. And I was there as a service because I wanted to create the kind of model of healthcare. I was not there because of the big bucks. And I think it's true. A very large number of the faculty at OHSU could make more money doing something else. That's not why they're there. And I think the same thing is true at Portland State, that the kind of commitment of faculty are to the institution. It's also true in other universities around the state because none of them pay enough to keep somebody there on the basis of the big dollars.
Mm-hmm. Paul, did you want to respond at all?
No, and I understand and I appreciate that's happening, but I just have to just want to put that out there.
Okay.
But thank you again.
Great. Representative Sprink.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to, I don't have a question. I'm not going to try to make my statement into a question.
It's
just a statement.
Works.
It did. I just want to offer this up. I would not be a good state representative from my House district if I didn't mention and this is certainly not competition by any means, but there is a new university going in, Lebanon, Comp Northwest, Northwest University. It's a medical school doing some great stuff. There's enough to go around. There's absolutely enough to go around. Ways and means, we've had lots of conversations about shortage of nurses.
And so there's plenty to go around. Certainly it's a private university doing some great things, working on some of those rural health care issues, and we certainly know the numbers around that. But I think, I guess I just want to offer that up, that there's options, and it's good, and I'm glad that we have the option of a public university, or we have an option of something a little more rural.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yes, thanks for reminding us of that. And, of course, you know, OHSU, as we all know, has, you know, people working all over the state, as was said, you know, in residencies and just a variety of programs. And presumably the same thing would happen, you know, with the closer alignment with Portland State. Any other? Yes, Rep. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really appreciated the just the overview of this strategic alliance, as you referred to it, that you each institution has collaboratively come to work within. I'm wondering, as you've done that and you've perhaps received feedback from the private sector within, let's say, the Portland metro area and so forth, what are you hearing and what, if any, specific suggestions they have about the path to take for the future?
We had private sector representatives on the task force, and that was very, very helpful. In general, when I've discussed this with people, and I have talked about collaboration with OHSU as one of my lead ideas under one of my five themes, namely achieving global excellence, which is one of my five themes, and then I always talk about the collaboration with OHSU as one of the key ways that we try to achieve that global excellence. And invariably, I get very positive comments about that, not necessarily sort of specifics, you know, well, you ought to do X, Y, or Z, but people seeing it very much as that collaboration is the key to creating a great urban research university, whether, you know, that is one institution or a partnership approach. But people around the Portland metropolitan area clearly see that as something that is important for the region, but really also for the state.
Yeah.
Chair Dembo, members of the committee, I would just echo that, and I think they're encouraged when they see the universities working together. It makes them feel that the state's resources are being leveraged, and I think it further enhances the belief that is at both institutions. We do not view ourselves as competitive. We view ourselves as very complementary, and, you know, the more that we work together, the more effective we'll be, and I think that's the message it sends when we do that.
I got involved in this because I was sitting in a meeting of the business summit and listening to a presentation by Joe Courtwright, an economist, a private sector economist, who was talking about barriers to development, to economic development in the area for the business community, and the lack of a major research university in the metropolitan area was, he picked as probably the third most important thing, not only because it's to produce the staff of the businesses, but because when businesses move here, they look to see what strength they have in the university segment. So this is, I think, in my mind, came very much out of an interest in fostering business development in the area.
I just follow up, since we've all kind of weighed in and to some degree about our hopes and dreams and all that so forth stuff. But, you know, as we come out of here and we have obviously come out of the session, you know, we've got some bills that are talking about, you know, changing our higher ed system and so forth. But I hope that as we go, you know, we look at this as a part of a strategic plan. And I think what you guys are doing there locally in Portland is part of that. But recognizing the uniqueness of Oregon, you know, we have Portland, which has some wonderful attributes. We have our other outlying areas, which also have some amazing, you know, things going on. We heard from, you know, the folks at Eastern, you know, last week and so forth. But to come away with a vision for coming up with a uniquely Oregon plan that's good for the state, it's good for the metro area, good for those folks that are in some of the areas Rep. Hoyle referenced earlier, but recognizing that one size doesn't fit all. You know, we're not going to take a plan off the shelf from some other state and just impose it here. That whatever ultimately is the ultimate outcome for our higher ed system in Oregon is something that reflects who we are,
that shows that we have a strategic plan that can encourage investment and innovation, and that, you know, we can be who we are, and you're proud to be Oregonian. So I just want to thank you guys for what you're doing in that endeavor, and I think advancing this dream down the road quite a ways in your collaboration.
Okay, with that, I want to thank you both presidents for giving us your time so generously and giving us this update, and Rep. Greenlick for bringing this bill before us and making this conversation not only possible but necessary. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And with that, I will end this information hearing, and then I will close the meeting.
Just talk about it in the next week or two, just for the informational for the committee.
Sure.
Kind of let us know where we're at. And maybe get a little feedback if necessary from some of the committee about just how much information they're still looking for and needing. And
I don't know how much feedback you want, but...
Well,
regarding
the agenda and so forth,
right.
That's what
we're
looking for. Yeah. You can hold your fire.
Okay.
Yes, colleagues, just to clarify, we had a meeting this morning. We talked about the schedule for the next couple of weeks. We have Anna, tell us what's coming up just for the next couple of days, and then...
Sure. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. On Thursday, we will be hearing from the University of Oregon as well as OSA relating to an overview of Senate Bill 559 and SJR 20, kind of getting that sort of overview. And then the following Tuesday, I believe we are having an informational meeting on the Applied Baccalaureate Study as well as the Rural Access Study that was conducted by the Joint Boards of Education. And then the following Thursday, we are also having an informational meeting targeted more specifically at career schools and career colleges and kind of getting a better sense for what's going on with them and their current trends. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And beyond that, we have no bills in the pipeline and apparently no prospects for bills coming our way in the near future. So if there are issues that you would like us to be exploring and setting up informational hearings on, this is an opportunity. So we just ask you to think about that over the next couple of days, and we will try to have a sense by the end of next week, I think, or...
Exactly.
Yeah, well, certainly by the middle of next week, if we are going to schedule additional informational hearings.
Sure, and recognizing time gets valuable, and if there's nothing particularly valuable to glean from getting together, that we each could find ways to use our time, I'm sure. So,
I think the more examples we could have of collaborative working relationships would be... the better.
Yeah,
I think
she's
that's
kind of in that kumbaya mode, aren't you?
I'm in the...
She's in the leveraging mode.
I'm in the...
Oh,
show
no.
How we can work
Mr.
together
Chair.
Well. I like this committee. I think this is a really good committee, but you're right. If we're not actually going to be able to do anything, I want to make sure we're using our time wisely, although, as I said, I think this is an excellent committee. I'm really proud of the work that we've done and could do.
Okay, with that, I will close this meeting.
See you Thursday.